Good evening, Baltimore, and hello, America. Namaste all day. Welcome to the Relationship Experience. This is Radio for Your Life. On the Relationship Experience, aka RE Radio, we like to wake up your minds to health, happiness, love, and awareness. We'll discuss both trending and not-so-trending topics, but basically, we just want to improve the relationship that you have with yourself. And it's truly an honor to get to kick it with you as always. Of course, you, the listener, are invited to join in at 410-319-8888 on WEAA, your source for cool jazz and more, 88.9 FM. I am Changa Bell, and what we're going to do is talk creativity in business today, because for the month of June, we're doing creativity as a whole, but I thought, isn't it interesting to do it in business? So you can follow up this conversation. You can listen to the archives on iTunes. You can listen to WEAA.org, or you can go to RERadioshow.com. We also archive there. And this and all other WEAA podcasts are on WEAA.org. Just an honorable mention, the Black Male Yoga Initiative has launched a GoFundMe for its curriculum, its youth life force development curriculum. So please go on to GoFundMe, hit that up as well. So tonight we're joined in studio with Davon Love, who needs no introduction. This man is all over the city, leaders of a beautiful struggle. He and co-founder Adam Jackson are just doing a thing in Annapolis, doing a thing on the ground. And also another young man that needs no introduction, Ray Davis of Flight American Fusion Restaurant on York Road. If you don't know, you better go in there and get some vegan ribs, get some waffles and chicken. I mean, it's a very good restaurant. You can also get drinks there. So we're going to let them introduce themselves. But I'm really excited to introduce, no slight to the men that are in the studio, Lisa, and maybe I don't say the name right, so feel free to jump in and correct me, Licia Ascolise, the inventress, founder, and CEO of Inventing A to Z. She's been inventing since she was 9 years old. She's been taking her ideas and others from concept to fruition over 35 years, and she's just coming home literally today, like maybe an hour ago, from Black Enterprise, where she was prepping inventors to do their pitch to Shark Tank. And she so graciously made herself available to us tonight, so we want to give her a big hand of applause for joining in on RE Radio. But let's start to my left, because I just like to go clockwise, with Davon Love. We're going to allow him to introduce himself.
So I'm Davon Love, Director of Public Policy for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. Really appreciate the invitation to come on and talk about creativity in business, which is actually different from normally what I'm on EAA to talk about, but something that I think, you know, the work that I've been able to do with my organization and the team to really talk about this idea of social entrepreneurship is really the basis for how we have thought about the idea of monetizing our value, taking, you know, the things that we know, our human social capital, and be able to launch that into, you know, a financial enterprise that's kind of embedded in the idea of doing social good. So I'm looking forward to getting, you know, into that.
Yeah, and moving from left to right, I appreciate all those sentiments. And this is why, for the listening public, if you're not familiar with Davon Love, you're going to love listening to him speak. He's very articulate, but not in the sense of assimilation articulate, in the sense of coming from a true space of intelligence and observation. And he's gonna have a lot of positive things to say. On to the man himself, who also, and I come to find out, little backstory, they were like number one and three in their graduating class of of high school. So they intelligence spilled over, and this is Ray Davis. Ray, introduce yourself.
I'm Ray Davis, owner and chef at Flight American Fusion. As Changa said, I want to thank Changa for bringing me in today to discuss some of my views about entrepreneurship, and I'm short and sweet to the point.
Yeah, okay. All right, and so not least in our minds at all, Miss Lisa Ascolise.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you so much for having me on the show. My pleasure to be here. Last minute, of course, invitation, but much greatly appreciate the fact that you guys reached out. I know you just recognized me on Black Enterprise. So happy to be here and talk about inventing and entrepreneurship, whatever I can add.
Yeah. That's one of the main reasons. And I'm glad that my wife, producer Devonna Bell, who neglected to be a part of the panel tonight, she's on air. She will definitely steal the show from me. Everyone loves her voice. I love her voice.
She's a doll.
Yes. At some point, she's going to start coming on more often. But she gave a big backstory to you for me, because I've been out all day, just about the research and the development you've been in. So it's going to be invaluable to have your viewpoint and your suggestions to the listeners. So I myself, as the founder of the Black Male Yoga Initiative, also owner operator of Sunlight and Yoga, you know, it's been very challenging as a business owner to come up with products that meet the public, because where purpose and mission don't exactly meet the marketplace. So I wanted to talk about a little bit of that dissonance, and where, you know, at least for me as an entrepreneur, and anyone can chime in with their views, I wanted to be an entrepreneur for something that gave me purpose, but that didn't necessarily meet the demand of the marketplace. So I had to come up with creativity. As I mentioned, that's the theme for this month, creativity to find a way to make those two mesh. Does anyone else have an experience with that dissonance, as I'm talking about, in terms of purpose, mission, and also marketplace?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of, you know, young Black folks aren't exposed to is they aren't exposed to the way in which social capital shapes the way in which people are able to get access to resources to start their business, but also even be aware of the various markets that exist. And so I think too often what happens is that a lot of us then try to develop skills or enterprises that we think fit the markets that we think exist without really full knowledge of the full scope of all the markets that do exist. And so I think, you know, to your point, in terms of, you know, trying to adjust to what's out there on the market, I think that one of the things that I was really fortunate to have, you know, a mentor early on several years ago, David Miller, shout out to David Miller, mm-hmm. You know, who sat me down. And one of the things he said, you know, there's always a way to figure out how to monetize the skills that you have and the things that you're passionate about. It just requires some front end sacrifice and some discipline on developing the kinds of products that are in line with your purpose, and then being disciplined about taking the steps necessary to expand your brand in those relevant circles, and to be consistent. And I think, you know, most of us are used to being taught that the way to money is like getting a good job, right? So, you know, most people don't understand the importance of investing on the front end, and cultivating your gift and having the discipline to be consistent about it. But that was some advice that was given to me early on, and we've been able to monetize our skills.
And let me go over to Lisa for that one, because you mentioned a very good point, Davon, which is exposure at a young age. So, Lisa, you know, in your bio, it says that you've been inventing since the age of 9. That doesn't necessarily mean that you were inventing for the marketplace at that age, but where did you get the exposure to even want to do something like inventing as a business, or did you want to, and it's something that just came along, you know, later that you developed the inclination to do it as a business?
Well, it kept happening over and over again. And when you have a passion, like Devon, I believe you said the same thing, you know, taking the product that you have and essentially trying to monetize that. But for me, it's absolute passion brought me to where I am today. Passion, dedication, and, you know, I'm piggybacking exactly what you said. And staying in your lane and being having knowledge of what you're doing. I was an inventor from day one. It turned into, I started monetizing because I almost had no choice. I was developed when I had young children. I was nursing, and very embarrassed to nurse in front of anybody. I had to design a product that would cover me in public. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first product I developed. Was called the Bosom Buddy Breastfeeding Cape. And I knew that if I needed that as desperately as I did need it, other people needed it. And there were plenty of other products prior to the Bosom Buddy that were not monetized on a grand scale. I sold things in school when I was in high school and in college and so forth, because people asked me where I got what I had on, or what, you know, that I was giving to somebody else. So so I was pushed into it because of my passion. And in terms of, like you're asking about finding the right, you're talking about social and social economics. For me, it was finding the right people to pull me through and pull me up. And I kind of wiggled my way through, and I was, again, very passionate about where I needed to be in my space, which brought me to QVC Television and HSN and Evine Live and retail stores because I never stopped. My determination is relentless, which is a big part of being an entrepreneur and being a successful entrepreneur.
Agreed. But where did you get the well, so for me personally, it's creative financing that I had to do. So did you have support, like maybe from a parent or a family? Like, where did you get the creative resource to initially make those investments to create the products? And then I'm going to spill over into food with Chef Ray. Where did you get those creative, or let me not label them creative resources, where were you able to get your resources from initially?
Okay, well, what I did is I learned what to invent first because I had a plethora of inventions. I invented something that was very inexpensive to invent the first time, which was fabric. Anything fabric is inexpensive. So I had some savings, had a little bit of savings, and back in the day when I started, it didn't cost that much money to manufacture. So I did save. I had resources. There were small business institutes that I could have gone to. But I always tell people, save. You know, stop spending money on frivolous things and save your money. The first thing that people come to me and say about, and I can't afford to invent because it costs too much money, but you don't know what it costs to invent it. You got to do your research and take a look at, you know, what you have and what resources you have in front of you that you may actually have to develop and go maybe get a patent or whatever it is. But do some research first and find out who can help you. I researched the right people to help me, and it does. It takes a lot of legwork to get to that space, but that's what I did. I saved money.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Relationship Experience. I'm your host, Changa Bell. We have in studio Davon Love, co-founder of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, owner and chef Ray Davis of Flight American Fusion, and we have Lisa Ascolise of, she is the CEO of Inventing A to Z. You can join the conversation at 410-319-8888. Ray, so chef, everybody likes food, knows food, can do food. Where did you come up with the creative energy to want to do a restaurant, and how did you approach it from that endeavor? Were you thinking of dishes that maybe couldn't be found anywhere else, or what was your process in bringing about Flight American Fusion?
In dealing with people for so many years, I've seen different tastes in Baltimore and different styles of different things, and I've always had the passion for cooking. So I've seen the different things that people like, taking suggestions from guests over the years before and after I opened my own business. And I took those things and seen what there was a lack of in the community. I mean, there's food everywhere, but there's good food. The people want this, they want that, they want it late. They want to get things whenever they can get them. Well, I can get off of work. Maybe I'll see if I can get food when I get off. I don't work a 9 to 5. I work at 10 to 6. Or I get off work at 11 o'clock at night. Like, you got to see what's out there and see what the people need and what they want. And I just took that and developed it to the best of my ability. And that's how I came up with the product.
So I know both of you locally. So I look at Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle and Flight America. And you do like a lot of creative T-shirts and things like that. On an inventive tip, Lisa, what kind of... So you mentioned the breastfeeding. I know because my wife and I have 6 kids, and she breastfed all 5 of our children. And so I know what you mean about the being uncomfortable in public, be it at Flight American. I think we breastfed. It was not a big deal at all. No one second looked at us. But how did you creatively market some of those things? Was it just the you wearing it yourself, or how did you get it out to the masses initially?
Well, I did some mass mailing. That was my first product. I actually had to send things via snail mail. But after that, I just did some marketing through, well, social media, still do social media, but definitely mail, making phone calls, reaching out to buyers, corporations, and it was hard back in the day because, you know, when I did start, I didn't have any social media like we have today. It was all about picking up the phone and not stopping, just being really intense and staying the course, on target with buyers. From QVC, as I said, to HSN, to retail stores, and didn't stop. Once I knew the right person to get a hold of, I didn't stop. I didn't stop hammering them.
Right. And so do you have a similar experience, Davon? I saw you nodding your head. Did that something Lisa say resonate with you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I think particularly when you look at Black folks that have enterprises that are more about, that aren't like hard products necessarily, but things that are more inventive, or intellectual property even, I think there's a tendency for us to kind of devalue the worth of and so one of the things that is often undervalued is like our own indigenous social networks, mm-hmm. right? So if you think about like a lot of major entities, so you take like a polling company, for instance, that their responsibility is to go into a certain community and get a sense of what people think. And you're talking about like, you know, essentially, you know, white folks that come from outside of the community, they're able to have organizations that then, you know, hire people in the community to maybe go poll, right? Mm-hmm. And get a sense of what folks think. And so those are the kind of enterprises that, you know, in our communities that we could be entrepreneurial enough to use our own leverage, our own social networks to then be able to gather the kind of information that's really valuable. If you think about politics, I mean, one of the things that, you know, it's really important in politics is mapping out social networks to get a sense of what people think, you know, about certain individuals or what, you know, if certain candidates are viable. And, you know, what you'll find is that, you know, like institutions like the Democratic Party, and organs of the Democratic Party spend lots of money in figuring out what folks think. And so I think so to the, you know, the comment that was just made earlier, I think it's important to think about how we monetize even our social networks, the people mm-hmm. we know, the relationships that we have, such that we can then support our own products and our own creativity instead of giving it away, which is ultimately what we end up doing, is giving it away for paychecks that are a fraction of the actual worth right. of what we give away.
And I think you bring up a great point. So I think, at least in my mind, it often was that creativity was like not a right brain thing. Like, at least it wasn't an analytical thing. Mm. So, but what you're bringing up is a great point, that creativity and strategy go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Ray, would you feel the same way about that statement?
I do. I feel the same way. And being creative, I find that a lot of people are shy, and they don't live their own brand. They don't be their own brand. They don't talk about it in everyday life. Just like a conversation you and I had the other day about, you know, some of us didn't know all of the things that we do. Some people don't know. I'm also the president of Project EAT. So, mm-hmm. you know, we don't talk about these things and network ourselves and network and make ourselves fully available with everybody that we surround ourselves with so that they know our brand and that they know what we do. So our creativity gets beat down because we don't talk about it. We don't live it enough. If you see me walking in the streets of Baltimore, if you see me walking into the bank, if you see me going wherever I'm going, it's more than likely I'll have a flight t-shirt on. Mm-hmm. I live my brand and I'm confident about it. And I think that's where a lot of people lack.
So being a lifestyle brand and everything. Now, so Lisa, I have to flip the question just a little bit for you, because I wonder, and you know, I'm just wondering out loud right now, mm-hmm. as your business is built upon the precipice of creativity, do you find yourself, at least maybe in that creative process, trying to think over analytical, or are you combining the two? Like, as you're in creation mode, are you also thinking, oh, I can market it this way, I can put it on this supply chain, or like, does that interfere with your creative process, or is it one and the same?
It doesn't. It really doesn't, and that's a great question. It absolutely goes hand in hand for me. And you have to remember, I'm doing it for a long time. When I started, yes, I was an over-inventor. Mm. And like many brand new inventors and entrepreneurs, they overthink. I call it over-inventing. Mm. I've learned to curtail that in my life because, again, I've been doing it for a long time. This morning, for example, I developed a product. And I do that daily, by the way, in my head, usually.
Awesome.
So this was so good. I put it on paper, and I actually designed it while I was on the phone.
Mm.
And I did my domain. Okay, wrote down my domain. So it does go hand in hand. As soon as I develop a product, I do strategize. I come up with a name immediately that works, if you can. If you can immediately come up with a name. This one happened to hit right away. So to answer your question, you must strategize. If you're coming out with a product that you want the whole world, obviously, to purchase, you need to think about where it's going to go. Think about your demographics and how you're going to get it out there.
Now, I love that perspective and what you just said, because I'm Davon and Ray. I want you to open that up. Since we're all here locally, I know, of course, for myself, I think internationally. I want to do yoga retreats in different parts of the world, et cetera. I want to touch people with the Black Male Yoga Initiative and see change throughout the world. But when I incepted it, I wasn't thinking about it as global. And so since you have a local restaurant, but you're also president of Project EAT, you just said, so these things, how is that when you incept stuff, are you viewing yourself as a global citizen, or are you just thinking sort of locally? Because I think that's a very different thought process, at least for me. When Lisa said it, I was like, wow, that's pretty intense. Like, I do think of a name, I think of the domain, strategy, all of that. But then she said very pointedly that if I want the whole world to get it, what are your thoughts on that? The whole world, or was it just Baltimore, or is it Baltimore, then D.C., then Philly, then the whole world? How does that go in your mind? Either one of you can answer first.
Well, I mean, I think, I mean, at least with LBS, I mean, we were fortunate to come out of a network. I come out of the activity of policy debate. So there's networks around the United States, around this activity. A lot of folks that come out of policy debate end up in major think tanks and public policy institutions around the country, around mm-hmm. the world. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of a natural understanding of the reach of the kind of skills that we had developed and the kind of services that we provide and the kind of the human capital that we have. So we were fortunate that we were kind of incubated in the context where that was already kind of a thing that we understood in terms of its reach. I think far too often, though, I think because for us, we have an emphasis on Baltimore.
Yeah, local.
You know, but I think what we've come to understand, and I think what's important for a lot of people to understand, is that there are a lot of folks that are looking for models to how to do some of the things that folks, I think, are really humble in terms of understanding the impact of what they do. And I think so humble to a fault that we don't realize that there are other folks in other places that can benefit from the things that we've done, mm-hmm. you know, and vice versa. And so I think both just speaking, you know, for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, but also like other entrepreneurs in Baltimore, there's a lot of tremendous talent in Baltimore and a lot of really, you know, great ideas and really good entrepreneurs. You know, one of the things that, you know, that often frustrates me is as a person who's, you know, gone to certain national spaces, mm-hmm. particularly in like in our line of work, you know, I see very mediocre people in some of those national spaces primarily because of their networks and relationships. Mm-hmm. So I often just imagine how amazing would it be if we were able to leverage those relationships, but for some of the really quality work that folks are doing on the ground.
Yeah, yeah, I love that insight and that perspective. I want to take a call because I know we only have Lisa for the first 30 minutes of the show. So just in case the caller wants to address something that Lisa is talking about. Connie from Baltimore, you have a question on branding. You're on the air, the Relationship Experience. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm so sorry. I just actually started tuning in. Uh-huh. But I'm an entrepreneur myself. I'm a brand new entrepreneur. I started a mobile candy business, and the gentleman was talking about branding and how at all times you should, you know, have your brand and be confident behind it. And I actually agree. That's one of the things that I struggle in is actually understanding what branding is, how to communicate what it is I actually do, and what does that look like for other people when, you know, I'm explaining that to them. And then on top of that, the global mindset. Because I want it also to be a global business. It's basically like holistic candy and snacks, you know, a healthier way of snacking with, you know, having a healing component to it, which is basically what I'm formulating. But it's like when I go to talk to people about it, I get very nervous, I get shaky. You know, it's like I'm very confident in what I do normally, but when it comes down to, like, my business, I don't want to be an agitator. I don't want to, you know, like, you know, what is too much, what's too little,
Connie, let me cut you there because I want to give you time to listen to the answer, because let's bounce that question to Lisa, who has had products on a home shopping network, who teaches people how to pitch to Shark Tank, who literally just got back from Black Enterprise. Teaching a workshop on that today. Let's see what, because that sounds like a great idea to me, Lisa, holistic snacks and candy. What would you say to Connie and what she was describing as a challenge to her?
Sure, and that was one of the things I wanted to say is less is more, Connie. So three bullet points. What are the best features and benefits of your product? Get that out immediately in 8 seconds or less. So because you don't want to lose your, you lose your buyer, you don't want to lose anybody you're pitching to. So just have confidence and faith in what you're doing. Remember that. So talk about the product, what it is, immediately. And then you can start talking about, I developed the product because of blah. But make it short and sweet. We're interested in what the product is. I'm very interested to hear more about what your product is, and maybe you can shoot me an email, and I'll say it out loud. It's info@inventingatoz.com. That's info@inventingatoz.com. So short and clear and concise and right to the point about what your product is first. And, you know, then you talk about where you're selling it, and, you know, and branding is important. Branding, social media, put it out there. I mean, we have such an opportunity to get things on YouTube and on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and quickly. And you can quickly get your product out, but practice your pitch. Get it down in 8 seconds or less. And just know your three bullet points, most importantly.
So do you have and I know because we're going to wrap up in about 60 seconds. For someone like Ray Davis who has Flight American, what would so you have these product applications mostly, I would guess, for HSN and those sorts of things. Do you also consult with folks that have like brick and mortar and expanding them out into products that could be global? Or do you not sort of advise or support folks like he and I, because actually I fall in that realm too with the yoga studio.
All my clients. You are all my clients, every single one of you. I have a conference called the Association of Women Inventors and Entrepreneurs where people come out and listen to professionals speak about that. Just, we call, my mission statement is bridging the gap between ambition and success. So for people like you who are entrepreneurs with whether they're tangible or intangible products, absolutely, I talk to you, I give you some guidance and direction in terms of how to start, where to get money from, and all of those things. So to answer your question, yes, I do.
Awesome.
And if you have some sauces in your restaurant, I mean, always looking to put products, food products on television also.
Oh, we're definitely going to talk about that.
Oh, right. He's got some hot stuff that makes my nose run every time I eat it. It's very good. I can't stay away from it, but it cleans me out. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Relationship Experience. I'm your host, Changa Bell. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us for this first half. If you could stay for the second half, I'd love to have you, but we'll get you on another time for the whole 60 minutes, if that's possible.
Absolutely, and I have about 15 minutes, so before I have to walk into a meeting, but I'll hang tight.
Oh, good. So you'll stay with us on the second half of the show. You're listening to your choice for cool jazz, your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Creativity is the moment when impulse, inspiration, and our will to act collide. We go blind in the natural eye, but gain vision in the spiritual realm. Release yourself to the plane of possibility, where God can express the fullness thereof. Let's say this affirmation to express our freedom to flow and not fight the creative energy of life. I create because I am. I share creation because I am. I make a sacred space for creation because I am. I express all manner of love, abundance, and humility because I am. Amen. Ashe. Namaste. And welcome back to the Relationship Experience. Hopefully that didn't put you to sleep in your car. It just got you nice and relaxed. Or if you were listening on the app, the WEAA app, if you don't have it, download it. We're joined in the studio with Ray Davis of Flight American Fusion, leaders of a beautiful struggle. We all know leaders. We have Davon Love in here. We're not used to seeing him without Adam Jackson, so shout out to my brother Adam Jackson. And we have on the phone Lisa Ascolise, inventor of A to Z. So we have a great connection that just happened. I'm going to jump right in. Tam from Baltimore called wanting to get a hold of Connie. So Connie actually called back on her own accord. So Connie, you stay on the line. We're going to take Tam from Baltimore for a question or comment. Hi, Tam. Welcome to the Relationship Experience.
Hi, my name is Taryn. How are you?
Oh, Taryn. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I misread that.
Not a problem. Yes, I was listening. I was just coming back. I am an upholsterer. And I'm about to step out in space also. So to keep me in your prayers. I'm going to call myself Lady Fingers Upholstery.
Okay.
Connie had struck a nerve. I understand that she makes holistic snacks and candies.
Yes.
And I would love to support her.
All right.
I need her information. She may be saving a lot of lives.
All right, well, that's great. So that was a comment. So, Taryn, stay on the line, and the producers will connect you with Connie. I'm going to take Connie on the air real quick again to see if she had another comment she wanted to add, but they will connect you to in a moment. So, Connie, you're back on the air with Relationship Experience.
Yes. First, I would like to say thank you because I'm, really emotional right now, on the verge of, crying and everything. So that is awesome because I need a baker. Oh, this is crazy. Anyway, but I only called back because the woman, I think her name was Lisa.
Yes.
She gave all her email address. So I'm also a cab driver.
Okay. And, so you want to get Lisa's email address?
Yes, I got
and my
I got
website
the info at inventing. But I didn't get the last part of that.
So two things I'm going to say to that before you hang up. Don't hang up because we're going to connect you with the other caller. And the second thing is always go to the archives. You have the archive to the show on iTunes. We'd love for you to click on there and listen to it again. Listen, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And then you can also get weaa.org and listen to the podcast there, or even on my own personal website, reradioshow.com. However, we're going to have Lisa say that again slowly. She's on the phone, so it's a little hard to hear. So if you don't catch it this time, Connie, just listen to one of the archives, okay? So Lisa's going to give it again.
Okay. Hi, Connie. Thanks for calling back. So it's info at inventing, the word inventing, A, T as in Thomas, O as in Oliver, Z as in zebra.com. And please go to the website also. It's the same. It's inventing, AtoZ.com. Okay, it's also going to take you to my conference. It pops up immediately, AOE, the Association of Women Inventors and Entrepreneurs. Love to be able to help you, Connie. Love to send me an email. Love to help you out. Maybe push those candies for you. Love the sound of it. I love the idea. It's new, innovative. Love to help you.
All right. Awesome. Thanks. Thanks, Taryn. Thanks, Connie, for calling. So that's great. That's what we want to do to show. We want to have a conversation. So we want people to get involved. I want to stay on the topic of creativity, but also bring it to this is sort of non-traditional ways of thinking of creativity. So political. I find that there's a lot of political challenges and obstacles here in this city. So Davon champions that because large in part his organization is political. Ray, there's a political aspect to what you do in that you have the liquor license. I know that's a very rare commodity here in the city. As far as I know, they don't even have new ones issued that you sort of have to buy from other existing ones. You'll clarify that in a second. And then Lisa, we'll start with Ray and Davon, and then I'd love for you to round out before you leave us and talk about if there's any kind of political barriers that you have in terms of creating your products. I would imagine you do if you get them manufactured in other countries. You could also speak to that briefly as well. So Ray, let's start off with you in terms of creativity and getting around or dealing with political landscape challenges?
Well, as any challenge, especially with opening any brick and mortar location, there's going to be some challenges, whether it's dealing with zoning or housing here in Baltimore, different boards that you have to sit in front of, the liquor licensing board. There's always going to be some kind of challenges. So especially with restaurants and bars and liquor licensing, it's very hard unless you have large amounts of capital. So,
what's a large amount of capital for a liquor license? Do they issue new ones or no? Is that the deal here?
There is a way to get a new liquor license in Baltimore, but you have to spend about $200,000 in order to get one.
Wow. Okay, that is a large amount of capital.
I mean, the other way to do it is to buy an existing liquor license that can transfer to another location, but you have to know exactly what you're doing to jump through those hurdles or you'll do something wrong.
What's the price range for an existing liquor license? I would imagine it's maybe less than $200,000 or?
There's some floating around out there. I don't want to
give somebody
the wrong idea, but it's still a large amount, but it's not, it's fractional depending on spending $200,000 to $300,000 to open a restaurant.
So that barrier to entry is there. And this is what I'm talking about in terms of creativity for people that are coming up, because what the narrative that's sold to us a lot is, all right, well, you got to hustle, deal some drugs, do something, deal some guns, do something illegal to get this capital. But there are other very legal and very tangible ways of getting that capital. And did I cut you off, or were you finished with that answer? All right, cool. Let's switch over to Davon, and then we'll end it there with Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, one of the things that has been difficult to do, I've known people who've been trying to do like a black arts district in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And the importance of that is you create an ecosystem of institutions that will provide a platform for a lot of the creative genius that exists in our communities. And so a part of what happens in Baltimore is that, you know, a lot of the resources that elevate people in terms of their platform to be able to have their art undergo high circulation, you have to be connected to a white institution in order to get that level of access. And so it creates a context where, you know, those, you know, black artists, folks who are creative, that are close in proximity to our community, oftentimes have to, in many ways, not necessarily abandon, but, you know, create distance, you know, from that community, only get access to the kinds of things they would need in order to be able to monetize their artwork to a pace where, you know, it's sustainable. For folks who may remember, in the late 1990s, early 2000s, when Martin O'Malley was the mayor of Baltimore City, one of the things he invested in was this notion of the creative class. Mm-hmm. So it was an idea of investing in Baltimore being a place where art thrived in a way that helped Baltimore's economy. And if you look at it, black folks in many ways were excluded from that, right? Even though if we look at just the general creative scene, there's a lot of genius that, again, it happens in Baltimore, but there aren't the institutions to elevate it to the extent that it needs to. So in terms of just the political nexus between creativity and invention and politics, is the importance, and historically, if you think about Pennsylvania Avenue, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it was kind of its own ecosystem of art and creativity for black folks. And so the challenge that I think we're dealing with now is this idea of creating the kind of ecosystem where, you know, black institutions are able to elevate the artworks of folks in communities such that it creates an ecosystem that makes it profitable and sustainable. Because a lot of, you know, black folks that make a decision to be entrepreneurs or to own businesses do so at great risk. There's a lot of kind of environmental obstacles to being able to sustain business, and it's just much harder for us to sustain our work. And so I think if we start thinking about, I use the term a lot, ecosystem. Because I think sometimes we get bogged down into supporting individual people, individual enterprises. But if we think about it like an ecosystem, it creates a context from which businesses can thrive instead of always feeling like you have to swim upstream.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, even today, so Center Stage has adopted a play, Jazz, from Toni Morrison. So mm-hmm. over a 45-year career, 11 phenomenal works of art. Only this is like the second mm-hmm. stage play to be adapted from her great body of work. So not to digress. So Lisa, your perspective on that last question.
I just want to add to that by saying, and this is a lot, it sounds simple. I know it's bigger than the words I'm going to speak. I want to say that we have to stretch ourselves out a little bit more. Go to a networking function, to a place that doesn't necessarily look like you. You've got to really reach out, and I know it's bigger than that, but we've got to, you know, step outside of our communities, go outside, introduce yourself to different spaces, because there's such a fear when people don't know who you are, okay? Introduce mm-hmm. yourself to others outside of your own circle, in order to reach those other folks that you want to reach and get into those other communities and get into bigger branches of different organizations, you got to stretch out. We got to try harder to put ourselves in positions that are not necessarily comfortable to us, because you got to start making those folks comfortable with you. Okay,
yeah.
That's really that's the bigger picture. And I know it sounds a lot easier than easier said than done, but that's, you got to get yourself into other circles.
No, I love that you said that. I got so excited, didn't mean to cut in while you were speaking.
No, that's important.
Yeah, because I think this notion of self, this self-sovereignty, once you're comfortable with yourself, then you can see yourself outside of yourself and making choices that for the benefit of more of a more neutral bottom line, and not that you're associated or disassociating from a community. It's something I struggle with a lot and have recently, as recent as this morning even, come into a coalescence with, bringing the two together. I think, Ray, you wanted to comment on... on something Lisa said?
Well, yeah, I agree with what Lisa said, and this is actually something that I worked on and doing a lot of the things that I've done in my career, like sales. I would go into just different places, rather be a bar or a restaurant or something you found in the newspaper, and just different things. And sometimes it's people, most times it's people that you've never seen before. But like the caller said, she's very nervous. That is an opportunity to practice your pitch. It may not be somebody that you've ever seen or that you'll ever see again, but that'll give you the perfect opportunity to get some practice on it. I believe her name was Connie.
Yeah. And I think this notion of being unapologetically who you are. So when we go to a Senegalese restaurant, it's because we want Senegalese food. I think the notion, at least that I've encountered here and more or less here, not necessarily in other places. And when I lived in New York, it wasn't necessarily so. But this idea of being identified outside of yourself. So, you know, for me, it was sort of shocking when a client said, well, yeah, that's why I come here, because this is a black yoga studio. And sort of wanting to be like, well, no, this is a yoga studio. I just happen to be black as an owner. Coming to grips and learning that, no, that is the reason that people will come. So being more leaning. I want some more left leaning, but just leaning into what I really want to be. So if I want, you know, brown bodies on the wall, to do that unapologetically, not that I'm alienating whoever, but this, that I'm encompassing my whole space of who I am. Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Relationship Experience. I'm your host, Changa Bell. This is also known as RE Radio. We're on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and more. It's the voice of the community. We've been doing it for over 40 years. We have in studio Davon Love of Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, Ray Davis of Flight American Fusion, and Lisa Escolise of A to Z. And I'm going to, nope, I messed that up. What is it?
Inventing A to Z.
I was about to say A to Z inventing, but inventing A to Z. Lisa, it is time for you to go, or are you're hanging all the way to A?
This is way too interesting for me. I'm not going anywhere.
That's what I'm talking about.
And we have to connect, because you guys are just outstanding. And I'm coming to that. I'm coming to the restaurant. To the yoga studio.
Yes.
I'm coming all, and I'm not that far away. It's a 4-hour drive.
Oh, all right. Well, that's
and I'll listen to your station on the ride.
All right, that's awesome. see, I was preparing now for farewell all that time. Now, good. So callers, if you are listening, you want to call in and get some knowledge like Connie did, and what was the other young lady, Taryn. It is what I try to do is bring experts and to really help us with our challenges, because mentoring, I think, is another piece that we touched on in terms of creativity. Having a mentor or someone that you can go to and really get access their knowledge base. I know that Jill Carter also supported Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle in terms of mentoring. You mentioned David Miller, who's also a peer mentor of mine. Lisa, did you have a mentor in your life that sort of guided your process in becoming an inventor or a businesswoman to the levels that you are now?
I was very, very blessed to have parents who supported me, and my background is West Indian, so they're very, very passionate about everything and education and all that stuff. So I say my mentors were definitely my parents, my grandmother, very, very positive role models in my life. You know, nothing was unattainable, and so I would say that. The other person, I do have to say there was one mentor outside of my family, Mr. Comer Cottrell. It may sound familiar. He was the owner of Proline Products, I believe sold to Johnson & Johnson at one time. But I went to him with my first product that I was putting on QVC television. It was a hair accessory I was developing. And I said, I want to go to the best. I want to find out from the person who knew the best about, you know, knew most about hair products. So whatever I'm doing, I'm going to speak to somebody who knows that lane, right? I'm not going to speak to somebody who doesn't know anything about it. So spoke with Mr. Cormac Trowell about it and asked him how I should approach that industry, who I should speak with in terms of manufacturing and otherwise. And so he, believe it or not, picked up the phone. He picked up the phone when I called him, and he mentored me through developing that hair accessory. A lot of people don't know about that, but he's passed away last year, and I tried to reach out to his family and so forth, but he was amazing. He was amazing. And because of him and my family, I mentor others. When someone needs help from me and guidance and direction, I do the same thing because I got it, and I'm always giving it back.
That's beautiful. So,
and don't be afraid to reach out and ask for a mentor. Don't be afraid to reach out. I don't care who that. It could be Steve Harvey. Mm-hmm. Reach out and say, Steve, I want you to be my mentor. You never know. You never know who's going to pick up that phone.
Yeah, and if they say no, just go on to the next person. Yeah,
That's right.
I love that you're supporting that. Ray, like, you know, not to get yourself in trouble too much, but what's the most creative thing you've done or that in order to sustain business or that maybe a mentor had you do? Like, so, and by creative, I mean, like, suppose you ran out of propane, so you went out and bought a ton of lighters and emptied the lighters into a thing so that you could heat. What's the most creative thing
that
you've had to
like
do?
Like a regular Wednesday.
Oh.
I don't know. I think the most creative thing I ever did was being the forefront of my brand. That's probably the first thing I can say.
Which is how we met.
Right. Yeah. In my last restaurant, I was on Charles Street in Baltimore. And being the chef, I was in the kitchen 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that you saw me. I was never out. I didn't do things with the brand. I did all the behind the scenes work. And moving to Flight, I decided that I would be the face of the brand. So I was out all the time. Pretty much anywhere I went, you'd see me around town. If I go, I would probably see Davon around town at 2-3 events a week. And just moving around, telling people. It was scary for me at first because I never saw me as that person. You know, I thought I had the perfect face for radio. Mm-hmm. If you know what that means.
Yeah, we know what that means, Ziggy. He doesn't. But he's being modest.
I think stepping out there and doing the things and facing your biggest challenges was probably one of the greatest things I ever did.
So you two are very interesting because you're like wise old souls. I think you're both not even 30 yet, are you?
Turned 30.
I'll be 30 in a couple months.
Yeah, so 30 and 30, and you're talking about like my first restaurant. You already own that up. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing, and they've done a lot. So in terms of having the sense of self and character to hang in there and deal with adversity and all of this stuff. What helped shape you creatively, Davon? What were some of the things or maybe one of the most creative measures you had to do? I know you do a lot of grassroots organizing, you're in Annapolis, you're lobbying. What's the most creative thing you had to do for your business?
Well, you know, I'll say a couple of things. One of the things that really astonished me, you know, as I kind of matured into the work I'm doing is realizing how much money folks get paid to think. Mm. Like there are folks that get paid money to figure stuff out. And one of the things that, you know, I began to realize is that some of the experiences that we had doing the community organizing and doing the political work actually gave us tools to be able to address problems that for us seemed pretty natural because we had to figure it out of necessity. But then eventually became an asset that people wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about, you know, folks who are professionals in their fields, you know, who want to learn more about, you know, how do you advocate on an issue? You know, something that for me seems really simple is something that people were like, wow, we want to figure out how to do that, you know. And so just in terms of creativity, again, initially we didn't see it that way. But just over the course of time, right, as certain things become natural. And again, I was fortunate enough to have mentors to be able to look and say, wait a minute, like y'all have a formula, mm-hmm. you know, and you need to both for the good of the community, teach people how to do it, but also in terms of sustaining the business. One of the things that we did early on, we made a decision because most organizations of our type are 501c3s. We made a decision to be an LLC, have a nonprofit fiscal agent, because, you know, the monies that you get from grants are limiting in terms of what you can do politically. But also a lot of organizations get into the habit of chasing grants. So it becomes about fulfilling those grant proposals. And so we were really interested in investing in this idea of social entrepreneurship, this idea that not only would we do things for the public good, but we'd figure out creative ways to be able to sell products that also would help advance the public good and sustain our organization. And we've been fortunate to get to a place where we can sustain our organization, being able to teach people how to advocate and teach people about the structural forces that affect our society.
That's beautiful. And just so that any listener that may not be clear, just can you unpack that fiscal agent part, the fiduciary funds? So you're not for profit, but just break that down a little bit just so that everyone's clear.
Yeah. So, I mean, different entities, your legal designation shapes the nature of what you can do as an organization. 501c3s, that's the category if you're a charitable organization, if you're a nonprofit. And so one of the things that people tend to do if they want to do good is their natural inclination is to say, let me start a 501c3, let me start a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so, but what people don't realize is not only just the political constraints that's relevant to my work, but just generally, right, that the work then becomes about writing grants to sustain the organization and its mission. For us, so if you think about the legal designation of an LLC, that means, you know, a limited liability company. So we're a company. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that, so for a 501c3, if you donated money to me, you can get that written off on your taxes. If you donate money to the LLC, you can't get that written off, right?
It's an expense, right?
Right. And so those are the things that you're kind of you're weighing if you're making a decision about how to constitute yourself as an entity. We went with a company because that gave us more freedom mm-hmm. to do what we felt was necessary. And it put us in a mindset where when you're an LLC, you're a company, you're selling products, you're figuring out how to bring in revenue. And in many ways, nonprofits run like corporations in many ways as well. They're just certain kinds of constraints that are way more political. But those are considerations that I think are important for people to think about as you determine what kind of entity you want to be to figure out what best suits your particular purpose.
And that company charges you a fee in order in accepting donations from.
So the nonprofit fiscal agent. So right, we have a fiscal equity badge as a nonprofit fiscal agent. So whenever we want to receive money for like our youth programming, then that comes through our fiscal agent so that we can do our work with the training that we do with young people around public policy.
So Lisa, you have a not-for-profit as well. What kind of strategic things went into you creating the not-for-profit as opposed to perhaps going with a fiduciary agent or someone that could receive on your behalf?
Well, no, I went right into nonprofit for AOE. I have a for-profit. The Inventing Agency is for-profit. That's an LLC. Mm-hmm. So this nonprofit, this is very interesting what you're talking about because I could learn a few strategies from you. The nonprofit I decided to go into because we give back to communities.
I see.
We have clothing drives and things like that. We collect clothes and you know, good clothes and give to young women in our communities, whichever community our conference is going to be held in. And we give back to soup kitchens and things like that. So we're constantly giving things away. I've not applied for any grants or anything yet. My conference is less than 2 years old. We've had actually our third annual conference in less than 2 years, and it's been awesome. But love to be able to speak with you regarding your business and what you do. I have a lot more to learn about nonprofits. That's for sure.
Oh, well, that's awesome to hear. And as always, this little bit of time that we have, this hour goes by so quickly. So I just want to say thank you to all of you. Just real quick, if you would each go around and give your handles either on social media or however you would like a listener to get a hold of you. So we'll start from the left as we started.
So Davon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, lbsbaltimore.com. Most of you can get all information. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm Ray Davis. Most people know me as Chef Ziggy in the catering community in the culinary world. You can get a hold of me or visit the restaurant, Flight Restaurant.
The website? Oh, yeah.
The website is flightbaltimore.com, as well as all of our social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter is Flight Baltimore.
All right. And Lisa?
Sure. Lisa Askley, the Inventress. You can go to my website, inventingatoz.com. info@inventingatoz.com is my email, and I actually answer my phone, 732-647-5433, 732-647-5433. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and what else is there, Facebook.
Yeah.
And you'll find me under Lisa Askley's The Inventress or Lisa Askley's. Any way you type me in, I'm calling up. Nice. And thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming in. And we can attest she definitely answers her phone because that's how we got her on here today.
So, thank your lovely wife. Thank your lovely wife for reaching out. That was awesome.
She's listening.
All of you.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal producer. So she's. I always say that I'm the Big Mac. She's the secret sauce. So Mac without the secret sauce is just what? A dry hamburger. It ain't nothing. So thank you for joining us on the Relationship Experience. You've been listening to Changa Bell, your host, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. I want to thank producer Iyore Odigizuwa, producer Devonna Bell. You've heard the goodbyes from all of our wonderful guests. I want to thank engineer Andre Melton. I called him Moulton. Yeah, he just cut me a look too. Andre Melton, our engineer, production assistants, Wayman Jones, Ali Post, and show intern Jay Ferg, Janelle Ferguson. Thank you, of course, listeners, for listening in. Continue to listen to WEAA. Follow us on WEAA.org. And of course, you can reach me at Changabell on Twitter, IG, and Facebook. Peace.